Hello, everybody. We are beginning with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 102. It's been about a week since we've been able to do these. And now we're back and forging ahead. Now, we just had completed the idea that the power of the personality lessens and wanes, whilst that of the soul waxes and grows. And there's much to be learnt from the study of the dual activity higher and lower of the etheric body, superdiaphragmatic and subdiaphragmatic, and its relation to and responsiveness to the constellation Gemini. But it is too abstruse for the ordinary student, which we are pretty much, and it is nevertheless an esoteric fact to be borne in mind that will someday be of real service to the astrology of the future when we're dealing with these transfers occurring within the energy of the etheric body. For someday, astrology will be lifted up to a higher plane. True interpretation will come and true healing in all departments of human living through a proper understanding of the available potencies and the energies pouring into the planet at any particular time. Gemini is a sign so much connected with the flows in the etheric body, and I have noticed also connected with the energies used in esoteric healing. The hands are one of those areas of energy transmission which are used particularly in esoteric healing, and Gemini rules them. It rules the etheric body as well. It also rules the breath, in a sense, and all rhythmic pulsation. These are all used in the art of esoteric healing. Now we move on, actually, to our beginning for this section. We come now to the consideration of the rulers, a consideration of the rulers of this sign, and there is much to be learnt from a study of them. The orthodox ruler is Mercury, who as the messenger of the gods, of the other planets really, or the divine intermediary, carries messages between the poles with speed and light. Mercury is a planet of rapidity. In one sense, it's connected with the third ray, although that is not the conventional ray given when analyzing the nature of Mercury. It's usually considered the fourth ray, but the third, fourth, and fifth, I believe, are all involved in the functioning of this particular planet. The poles, in this case, are the poles of the higher life and of the lower life, or any positive or negative situation. And light is the medium of transmission between these. If we consider the Antikorana, the Antikorana is called what? In other parlance, it's called the Bridge of Light. And Mercury is the ruler of the Antikorana. And the quality of the higher potencies, let us say, of the spiritual triadic centers, the Atma, Buddhi, Manas, these are connected to the soul-infused personality, to the soul-infusing personality, by light. And when we project to connect between these factors, we project a beam of light. That is how we work. Over this bridge of light, different types of energies travel. And they do so, I think, through the principle of resonance. Light itself is of varying frequencies, and these frequencies are transmitted over a bridge with certain fundamental frequencies as their basis. One thinks about the etheric body and the way there are sustaining frequencies which support the structure of the basic etheric body. And through these sustained frequencies, which are structural of the etheric body, there is also the transmission of prana of various frequencies, more fluid. So there are static frequencies, we might say, and mobile frequencies. And the bridge of light perhaps is a more static frequency matter of a certain kind, a largely higher mental matter, a blend of the matter of the fourth subplane and the other subplanes of the mental plane, and increasingly can be found built as well of frequencies which relate to the spiritual triad. And over sustained frequencies, like standing waves, over these sustained frequencies can come the mobile frequencies which are transmitted and which eventually can underlie substitute themselves for the lower ethers. The higher ethers travel over the bridge of light and substand the lower ethers. It's probably a dynamic that a certain kind of superphysics has to reveal eventually. But we are working constantly in light and with light of varying frequencies, and Mercury allows this transmission of light of various frequencies between each other. Especially in this case, it's not only the higher to the lower, in a way it's the lower to the higher. Mercury, the messenger of the gods, the divine intermediary, thereby showing its relation to the 2-4-6 line, which usually relates to that which passes between fixed points, and the fixed points have more to do with the 1-3-5-7 line. Maybe among them, of course, you know, in a way, there is an intermediary function for the fifth ray as well. The divine intermediary carries messages between the poles with speed and light. We are in a world now where fiber optics are used to transmit communication signals, and some internet networks are fiber optic networks. I think this is on a lower turn of the spiral. This is an analogy to its higher correspondence, where Mercury can work between the higher ethers and the lower, or between the personality of the monad, which is the spiritual triad, and the personality of the soul, which is the normal personality as we understand it. In this most potent and important planet, the idea of duality is again to be found, enhancing and enhanced by the influence of Gemini. Gemini here is the greater god, we must say. Let's see. Oh, right. What I see here is that I've... Right. Okay. These few little moments of getting adjusted here after a week away from the process. I'll be right with it soon. Okay. So Gemini, here is the greater of these gods. Because Mercury is a god, of course, but Gemini is a constellational lord. So we might say that the lord of the planet Mercury is learning much from the greater experience of the lord of the constellation Gemini. So enhanced and enhancing and enhanced by the influence of Gemini, and always with Mercury, there must be two poles. Let's just say there must be two poles to connect. This is its function, the great connector as well. So from another perspective, the great relator is the second ray. And we can see that there is a sense in which Mercury, although it's probably a fifth ray, third ray monad, is how I see it at the moment, is closely related to the second ray as well through its fourth ray soul. Mercury is the expression of the dual aspect of the mind as it mediates between higher and lower. Now, we can look at it this way. We can say there is higher mind of the second and third levels of the higher mental plane. And this is mediation between soul and personality, as we call it. But there is also the spiritual triad and the mediation necessary between the monastic permanent atom and the mental unit. That's a form of mediation. And there are other forms of mediation as well, because Mercury may be connected here with the what's called the dual aspect of the mind, yes. But the mind has a number of aspects to it. There is also, as I've mentioned, the transcendental mind, which is Buddhic and relates to pure reason. So we have concrete mind, we have the sun of mind. So this higher mind of the second and third levels of the mental plane is sometimes called sun of mind or soul mind. There is the abstract mind of the monastic permanent atom, or at least built up around the monastic permanent atom on the first subplane of the mental plane, and the transcendental mind of the Buddhic level. One wonders if particularly the fourth level of the Buddhic plane, which is given over to what is called intuition, and Mercury is one of the planets most important in the conveying of intuition, as is Neptune and as is Uranus as well. And then there may be something called the nirvanic mind, or the mind of law, on the fifth subplane of the cosmic physical plane, counting from below, that's the atmic plane. And Mercury is very much connected with the number five, and with the manipulating hand, which has its five digits, four and one. This meditation falls again into two stages. Now, I think he's going to describe this. The use of the concrete mind as the mediator within the personality, conditioning the personality life. So mediator within the personality, what would we mean by that? Coordinating the interplay between the various personality vehicles. So the mediator within the personality, or that which brings the personality vehicles into adjustment with each other and helps them communicate with each other. And it conditions the personality life, the intelligent personality. Mercury is one of the planets of intelligence. Okay. Analyzing and distinguishing between the human self and the not-self, after there is a strong sense of self, because maybe in the beginning, there is not such a distinction between the inner self and the outer environment, at least for the first 3 or so million years, DK tells us that the newly made human being had not really come to himself with a strong Leonian sense of his inner distinction from the outer environment. So there's the coordination of the personality life and the discrimination. Mercury is a discriminating planet between the human self and the not-self of the environment, and including all other selves, before the mystical phase of realizing that those other selves are really one self has emerged later in consciousness during the aspirational phase. And emphasizing the me and thou, or, you know, me and thou or I and thou consciousness. There's even a book called I and Thou. It's by a Jewish theologian of the last century, Martin Buber, who was very popular at the time. But emphasizing the me and thou consciousness as well as that of the personality and its environment. Yes, these are things I've been talking about. So two types of distinction, I and thou, and self and other, or self and an environment. So Gemini, Mercury, is at first promotes the sense of dualism, not yet resolved, an unresolved dualism, which looks factual at the time. But perhaps millions of years of experience will take care of this, and the unification of the subject and the object will occur later in the process. And this is what, as students of occultism and students of identification, we strive towards. So this is the lower Mercury, and let's just say lower Mercury and its functions, or the functions of lower Mercury. Are highly distinguishing and dualistic, and function very much within the realm of personality. Another function here. Secondly, it carries messages between the soul and the brain, I suppose with the mind as the mediator, and establishes right relation between the higher self, lower self, and the higher self. This is a more advanced function of Mercury. So Mercury is the lower mind here in a mediating function. Mercury represents the lower mind in a mediating function, mediating between soul and personality. And this is coming to the aid of those who are beginning their meditation. Interestingly enough, meditation is ruled by Virgo, the ruler of which is again Mercury. So it is a mental process of connectivity between soul, mind, and brain. And this is the threefold channel with Mercury as the mediating mind that all preliminary meditators have to establish a kind of transmission or energy flow which is undisturbed by the astral body, which DK tells us is often out of alignment. It is therefore the illumined mind that, relating soul and personality. Now, this is the question, of course, and personality. Let's just say the brain stands here for personality. And its ruler is Saturn. Interestingly enough, so we, I think, looked at Sirius, Leo, Mercury, and Saturn, with Mercury and Saturn playing the role, respectively, of mind and brain, and the higher centers being represented by Sirius and Leo. So the illumined mind, but what causes the mind to be illumined? And it is the soul. So Mercury will not take on this function until the mind has a certain measure of light which comes from experience, and then can turn upward, as it were, toward the higher mind, whence light flows into the lower mind, and this lower mind is illumined and can connect with the brain, conveying that light actually to the cells of the brain. So whenever there are dualities to be connected, we're going to look for some sort of influence coming from either Mercury or Gemini, or the combination of the two. This process of the higher relationship is carried forward with rapidity upon the path of discipleship. So again, this process of higher relationship, see, there's the normal, well, it's got some vertical elements in it, but it's basically operation within the personality, though there is a verticality to the personality factors. But the higher relationship is definitely a vertical one. In certain sense, Mercury also relates and coordinates the pairs of opposites that are found upon the horizontal axis. There are pairs of opposites which are not qualitatively higher or lower. Let's just look at heat and cold in a certain sense, and left and right, so to speak. They have a certain equality between them, in and out. Either can be good or bad, depending. But when it comes to the pairs of opposites on the vertical axis, for instance, soul and personality, or monad and soul and personality, then we have a vertical dimension, and Mercury is involved in ensuring a certain interpenetration, at least, of the lower by the higher. It's, in a way, we sometimes talk of two-way streets in these lines of transmission, but it is hard for the lower vibrations to be raised into higher realms, whereas higher vibrations can substand the lower vibrations. They are, as it were, present within the same space. The substanding, we call this interpenetration. So this process of the higher relationship is carried forward with rapidity upon the path of discipleship. Now, so that's the second aspect. Let's maybe see if we can number these. Yeah, they are already numbered. So the first is within the realm of personality. Okay, the use of the concrete mind, and this is firstly. Okay, so we'll put it like this. Firstly, here. And then secondarily, or second, between the soul and personality. Now we come to a third type of relationship or aspect. There is a third, so let's put this down. There is a third aspect of Mercury, which begins to function when the other two are perfected or in process of rapid perfecting, we would say, I suppose, after the stage of discipleship. Mercury, in this case, is the abstract mind. Notice how we've been dealing with the illumined lower mind and we've been dealing with the personality mind first. Let's just look at the stages we've been dealing with here so far. So far, Mercury has been the personality mind and the illumined mind, and now the abstract mind. And if we continue to rise in the description of Mercury, we will have what is called as well the transcendental mind and the nirvanic mind. At least I've given the name to that fifth type of mind. I wonder if Mercury, in a sense, extends any higher in its functions for man than the atmic plane. From another perspective, of course, Mercury is the sacred planet, and so its causal body will be on the cosmic mental plane. And I've wondered whether the causal bodies of sacred planets may not be found on the second level rather than the third level of the cosmic mental plane, higher cosmic mental plane. The causal body of Earth is found on the third sublevel of the cosmic mental plane, and Mercury is a more advanced planet. I wonder if its focus is not one plane higher. So there is a third aspect of Mercury, which begins to function when the other two are perfected or in rapid process of perfecting. That's the abstract mind. And in a way here, think of this. Think that Mercury relates to the abstract mind and monastic permanent atom, and Venus relates to the egoic lotus on the two lesser levels of the higher mental plane. So Mercury is an older planet, more occult. It's said to receive seven times more light than the Earth, and Venus three times more light than the Earth from the Sun. And here is an important Mercury-Venus relationship. Venus representing the soul per se and the flowering aspect of the soul, its unfoldment as the lotus on the higher mental plane, on the third and second sublevels of the higher mental plane, and Mercury here associated with the monastic permanent atom. So there's an interplay here. You know, when you're building the Antikorana, it's coming to me here. Well, think of the building of the Antikorana from within the egoic lotus. And what I'll do here is I do. And I'll go over here perhaps to a, yes. If this entire structure represents Venus, in a sense it does, and this structure is found on the second and third levels of the higher mental plane, depending on how advanced the individual may be, the initiate heading for the fourth initiation finds his egoic lotus on the second sublevel. And Mercury is associated with the connection here to the monastic permanent atom. Then this aspect of the Antikorana, because the Antikorana here is represented as a triangle, and I've discussed this, elsewhere. I think for some of the students I've discussed this. This is, in a way, an aspect of the Antikorana with which we are not very familiar. Here is the usual initial phase where we're trying to come on rapport with soul. We're an advanced personality. We're trying to come on rapport with soul. But here we are focused within the causal body and trying to become on rapport with the monastic permanent atom. And this is definitely here a Mercury-Venus relationship, this phase of the Antikorana. Sometimes when you see Mercury and Venus in the chart of a more advanced person, the opportunity to connect the egoic lotus with monastic permanent atom via that stage of the Antikorana which I sometimes call the philosophical mind or the mind reaching towards planetary abstraction, will be present. From another perspective, of course, Mercury does represent the sun of mind or soul mind, so then two aspects of Mercury are trying to connect with each other. Mercury also represents, in a way, the personality mind, so all these three points of the triangle could be considered related to Mercury, the different levels of the Mercurian function. Okay, anyway, these are some of the things that seem to be implied in what the Tibetan is saying here. Mercury, in this case, is the abstract mind removed from all form contact as we understand it. That is, as we understand form. Of course, the spiritual triad is also really a form. And anything on the cosmic mental plane, but anything on the cosmic physical plane is really a form. What is form depends upon the perspective from which it is being viewed. And as D.K. hints at 10 dimensions of cosmos, I think we're dealing only with the lowest two, namely the systemic dimensions on the cosmic physical plane and the cosmic dimensions where we have 7 cosmic planes and maybe 8 other types of super cosmic, whatever we want to call them, and way beyond our capacity to do anything but kind of formulate the possibility, those may exist. So removed from all form contact as we understand it, because the form worlds are the worlds of the dense physical body of the solar logos. And those are the 21 subplanes. These 21 subplanes, are these, and they are solar logoic density. These higher 28 subplanes are solar logoic ethereality. So our egoic lotus is actually included within solar logoic density, interestingly enough. And relates soul and spirit, and this again in two stages. So what we're learning here is we're learning about the types of polarities which Mercury can relate in its various functions, lower and higher. So Mercury is also the revealer of the spiritual triad, Atma Buddhi Manas, or spiritual will, spiritual love, spiritual mind. These are all, in a sense, the will, love, and mind of our planetary logos. They are to us impersonal, and they are not based upon our personal work in the lower worlds. So we've stepped into the field of energy and consciousness of the planetary logos when we're in the spiritual triad. Mercury is the revealer of the spiritual triad, Atma Buddhi Manas, or spiritual will, spiritual love, and spiritual mind to the soul. And in a way, what I was discussing here as this relationship between the monastic permanent atom and this soul structure is part of this revelation. Maybe the easiest type of relation is coming from the monastic permanent atom, but there are also other aspects of the spiritual triad which Mercury can reveal. And when it does so, I believe the Ajna Center, in one of its higher functions, is involved. So, reveal to the soul. So, let's just suppose if we dwell in soul consciousness, there are still higher revelations possible. And the soul consciousness can be infused by the consciousness of the triad, of the spiritual triad, and carries the disciple to the stage of the third initiation. Now, in the third initiation, the first level of the span of the Antikarana is quite completed. So there is a real firm bridge between these mental unit and monastic permanent atom, and it's also possible here for there to be a degree of mental triadal infusion of the egoic lotus itself. The egoic lotus, we know, is constantly changing its radiation, its intensity, its color, its amplitude, and it is being fed from below, but also from above. It's being fed by the triadal energies, and we see that if we turn to this diagram, and we see, if we could make this a little bigger, that from the various parts of the spiritual triad, there is a feeding of the those centers in the egoic lotus we call petals, from the monastic permanent atom, from the Buddhic permanent atom, from the atmic permanent atom. So there's a constant stimulation occurring, and at a certain point of evolution, it gets pretty intense. I would say that when it comes to the third degree, there's a strong connection between the monastic permanent atom and the egoic lotus. And with the fourth degree impending, the Buddhic permanent atom is feeding more and more, as well as the atmic permanent atom. They're not only feeding the outer petals, they are feeding the three inner or synthesis petals, stimulating the possibility of their unfoldment, their springing open, as it were, at the time of the fourth initiation. Obviously, you know, there's a lot to learn here, and we are being given the ABCs. We can infer. For us, this is not yet a provable science, but if we trust the Tibetan, which by this time I'm sure we do, we can then create intelligent inferences about how some of this may work and prove the veracity later and gather the details later. So Mercury is involved with the third initiation. Now, this is interesting because at a certain point, Mercury rules the Ajna Center, which Venus usually rules. Now I'm going to get the capitalizations correct, which Venus usually rules. So at that third degree, the fifth ray of Venus is prominent at the third initiation, and some fifth ray potentials of Mercury are also emerging. And the kind of gap between Mercury and Venus is being bridged at that third degree. So the mind becomes much more expansive. And it becomes possible to see as if in a certain phase of the light sublime from the mountaintop. And, of course, Mercury is not just the fifth ray. Mercury is the fourth and is conveying much of the light of intuition. And there's going to be a focusing, increasing focusing beyond the abstract mind into the intuitive levels following the third degree. So Mercury is involved in this third degree, interestingly here. It is then the revealer of the life aspect, which, let's just say, let's call it triad monad, during the processes of the higher initiations. So successively in the, from the spiritual triad, but upon These it is not necessary for us to enlarge, but we can understand that Mercury will convey Buddhic potency and also Atmic potency. Of course, there's, in a way, unless we remain in the same incarnation, taking the fifth initiation, well, even if we do, there will be no causal body per se. So then the Atmic potency has to be conveyed by Mercury, not so much to the petals of the egoic lotus, which will have been dissipated. Now, the details of that, you know, have really to be worked out. But the conveying of the Atmic potency can now come into the higher mind, which is reformulating around the monastic permanent atom. See, this is the question. When we take the fourth initiation of one life, and we don't particularly die, we don't die in the body, what is the receiving source? What's on the receiving end, taking the place of the egoic lotus when the egoic lotus has gone into the supernova state? Or is there any sense in which this egoic lotus is sustained? I would think not, because we're always told that at the fourth degree, the egoic lotus is destroyed. So even if you maintain your livingness, your personality, and some do, because the fourth and fifth initiation can be taken in the same life, we need a receptor for the atmic energy, which increasingly grows as we approach the fifth initiation. And that receptor will have to be, I think, our own mental triadal vehicle and not the egoic lotus at all. So there is a resonance, I think we can easily see, between the Atma and Manas. So here is the Atmic permanent atom, and it's along the 1357 line, and so is the monastic permanent atom. And following the destruction of the egoic lotus, I would speculate that a higher mental vehicle takes its place if the incarnation is sustained towards the fifth initiation, and then the main receiver of Atmic energy would be the monastic permanent atom, which will send it further into the mental unit. Well, in a way, see, that's interesting too, because in a way the mental unit cannot exist. So there must be a special case which occurs when the individual does not die at the fourth degree, but goes on to take the fifth in the same incarnation. Is there a temporary preservation of these members of the atomic triangle, or are they consumed in a fiery conflagration along with the egoic lotus? And then does some aspect of the Maya Virupa come in? Does some sustainment come in from the spiritual triad which keeps the personality in incarnation? Well, you know, if you follow these inferences, follow the consequences of what DK says happens, then you run into problems, because you see, after all, the personality must be sustained, but the normal life givers to the personality, which is the atomic triangle within the lower part of the egoic lotus, is not there. So somehow the triad has to sustain this whole thing, and of course the manner in which the triad can do that, you know, would be beyond our present understanding. In a peculiar way, then, therefore, Mercury increases in the Gemini subject the latent sense of duality, you know, which to say it's which is already Geminian in its various stages, and also the sense of distinction. So this sense of distinction can promote the sense of illusion and cleavage. And fifth ray rules the law of cleavages, and this demonstrates the fifth ray association with 2-2-2 Mercury. As I say, the planet of the third, fourth, and fifth rays. As I speculate upon this, and that's all one can do at the present moment, that the personality of Mercury would be the third ray, its soul the fourth ray, because I think DK does give the soul ray of the sacred planets. Mercury is a sacred planet. He calls it a fourth ray planet. Its monadic ray, the fifth ray, but that's really a submonadic ray, as one of the three higher rays has to be the major monadic ray, and probably in this case, I would say the third rather than the first. The problem there, of course, is the fifth ray usually transfers, at least in humanity, from to the first ray, but it's rather inconceivable that Mercury would have a first-ray monad. So there is a close relation between the fifth ray and the third ray, and I've often wondered, why is there not a transfer from the fifth ray to the third ray, as he says there, they have so much in common. He describes in Esoteric Psychology 1, which I will fairly quickly find, right around, let's say, page, 210, something like that, a little later. Between the third and fifth rays, page 211, 212, between the third and fifth rays, there is a close relationship. So why not a transferring relationship, I sometimes say to myself. In the search after knowledge, for example, the most laborious and minute study of detail is the path that will be followed, whether in philosophy, the higher mathematics, or in the pursuit of practical science. So philosophy and the higher mathematics generally given to the third ray, mathematics of a maybe a little lower kind, a practical kind, given to the fifth ray, and practical science to the fifth ray. So there's a close connection here between the third ray and the fifth. And, you know, when I'm dealing with the possible monadic ray of Mercury, because I think just like human beings, these planetary lords will have a secondary monadic ray and a primary monadic ray. And I've come to the conclusion that the fifth ray is suitable for Mercury, just as the fourth ray is for Vulcan. But those would be secondary monadic rays. And what about the transference? Well, Vulcan relates to the heart of the sun, obviously a secondary connection. The transference then in Vulcan would be from the fourth ray minor monad to the second ray major monad. And in Mercury, from the fifth ray minor monad, I believe, to the third ray major monad. When it comes to Mars, I also believe, interestingly enough, an orange planet, color of the fifth ray, that there may be a fifth ray minor monad transferring to a first ray major monad, just like the Earth. But this remains to be seen. And the purpose of such speculation as this is simply to stimulate the mind to grasp the possible patterns that lie above and into which we are being assimilated. It heightens a state of mental alertness. When we have these theories, these hypotheses, we look for confirmation or for refutation of the possibilities. So this latent sense of duality, Mercury increases, being a more concrete influence than that coming from the Lord of the constellation Gemini, it increases the latent sense of duality. There's always that, from individualization on, there is this latent sense of duality, I want to say. From individualization onward, there is a latent sense of duality growing ever stronger for a while, and then, of course, being overcome in its various stages, and also the sense of distinction, this and not that, leading to that mental agility between the distinct items, I would say, in the contents of consciousness, between the distinct items in the contents of consciousness, and that fluidity of mind, which is one of the major assets as well as the major difficulties of this sign, which has a mantram connected with it, a lower mantram that's saying, let instability do its work. What is that work? You know, exposing people to variety and at least having them not overlook all of this variety. It'll be a while before it can all be related meaningfully in a purely reasonable pattern, which is a Buddhic thing to do and involves another function of Mercury as well. This agility, fluidity, instability, discontinuity, if you will, you know, sometimes the agility involves discontinuity. Okay. Continuity has, however, to be rightly understood and handled. Otherwise, we have a situation of unreliability, instability, where there is no planted firmness possible. Of course, the pillars of Gemini give the sense of the possible firmness that can result. The pillars of Hercules are not dancing around, are they? They are the great pairs of opposites through which the candidate is entering, and that's a symbol of what he will learn to achieve, that noble middle path between them, which is neither of them and yet in a way includes both of them. So the agility has, however, to be rightly understood and rightly handled. It is the, I don't know, what can I call it, this agility? I call it by a peculiar name. Dance between distinctions. Well, I'd like to spell it right. So, you know, if you cannot make two things become one, at least you can go between them with speed and with light, with rapidity. If you go fast enough between them, it almost seems as if they're connected. When there is facility of mental approach in any direction and in connection with the many opposites in manifestation, the understanding of the opposites and their interplay, let's put that down, of the opposites and their interplay. Remember that Gemini is the light of interplay, but that, you know, we might almost say that Mercury borrows that title from him on a lesser turn of the spiral. When there is facility of mental approach in any direction and in connection with the many opposites in manifestation, you have the emergence of the divine messenger. That is what the divine messenger is showing us, the relation between all things, right, in his true character. Let's say, showing us the relation between all things and especially the opposites, which can be so difficult for the concrete mind to relate. Okay, you have the emergence of the divine messenger in his true character, able to comprehend extremes. This is so good. Able to comprehend extremes and relate them to each other. And I would just say, if you want to, well, I've said it before, if you want to understand anything, study its opposite, because it clarifies the very thing that you want to understand. Now, of course, DK is a marvelous example of precisely this kind of fluid mind. What a mind, relating with pure reason so many factors found within the contents of consciousness of the planetary logos, the solar logos and beyond, and of course within the human consciousness. How do all these things relate to each other and form one unified pattern? Gemini reveals that. So Gemini reveals how all things relate to form one unified pattern. So Gemini does eventually reveal the one by revealing the unified many, by revealing the relationships. Well, I'll put it like this, relationships existing between the unified many. This is so good. Able to comprehend extremes and relate them divinely to each other. Now, you know, you can also relate these extremes in an illusory manner. And that would be the way humanity often does. They could, unfortunately, be related in an illusory manner. And Mercury is also the god of illusion. So we're talking about a higher and illumined functioning of Mercury to relate things, because many people come up with a world configuration, an idea of how things are. It's illusory. It's based on wrong relations, wrong connections, fragmentation, and so forth. The unity is not seen, and there is a distortion of perception. And Gemini can be the darkened concrete mind, creating a theory of this and that, which is not based at all on archetypal reality. So when there is facility of mental approach in any direction, and in connection with the many opposites in manifestation, you have the emergence of the divine messenger in his true character, able to comprehend extremes and relate them divinely to each other. Gemini is preeminently the sign of the messenger. And of course, Mercury is called the messenger as well. And Master DK is called the messenger. So we can naturally infer that there's a lot of Gemini in the energy system of Master DK. And look, he chose Alice Bailey, a strong Gemini, to be his amanuensis. And those who inherited the Bailey work also had strong Gemini in their chart. Foster Bailey, Mary Bailey, Gemini Rising, Gemini Sun, respectively. HPB, who was his first amanuensis working in a different way, was not Gemini, but she had powerful Virgo and powerful Mercury. She had Saturn, Mars, and Mercury, all in Virgo. Exacting, demanding, incisive, analytical, and in the third house by some charts. So Gemini is preeminently the sign of the messenger, and this sign produces many of the messengers of God as they appear down the ages, the revealers of new divine truths. Well, we have Master DK here, don't we? This is MDK. And the intermediaries between the fourth and fifth kingdoms. So it pretty much tells you, if you want to enter the kingdom of souls, which is the fifth, utilize Mercury and Gemini. Because whatever information there is in that fifth kingdom, which needs to be presented to the consciousness of those in the fourth, Mercury and Gemini will bring such information, such energy, to the lower consciousness and illumine it. Okay, well, we are coming to the point where I'm going to create, let's see, this is End of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 102A, and we are on page 354. And the beginning of Esoteric Astrology 102B, starting again on page 354. I like to bring these programs into hour-long units. I don't always succeed. This method of talking about the books, you know, it's a bit spontaneous. I like to keep it that way. Of course, I, you know, could study every little thing before, but I don't. I have to rely upon the Mercurian connectivity of my own mind, having studied a lot, you know, relatively a lot in this life, but it's just a drop in the bucket, of course. I have to rely upon an elevated Mercury planet in my own chart to try to make connections, some of which, hopefully, will reveal the light. Lighted connections, and not the illusory connections that take us off the profitable paths. The purpose here, of course, is to seed the minds of the readers and my own mind with new ideas. So that's, you know, the Aries quality of my Mercury at work, the birthplace of ideas, or at least trying to bring certain ideas and certain connections into the normal consciousness of the reader, so that the kind of connectivity which Mercury offers, the kind of correlating possibilities emerge for the reader, and the many factors read about or within the contents of consciousness become more closely related in a manner which is illuminative and not simply related in the wrong or illusory manner. So we'll go on here in just a little bit, hopefully. Yes, we'll do that. Okay.